I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. In the summer of 2019, Lincoln Center Theatre in New York City showcased a production they commissioned and produced, In the Green. It's a one-act musical that told the origin story of one of medieval history's most powerful and creative women, Hildegard von Bingen. Joining me now is Grace MacLean, the writer of In the Green's book, as well as its music and lyrics. Ms. MacLean also performed in the role of Jutta, von Bingen's mentor. The original cast recording has been out since the fall, but just last week, Ghostlight Records released the CD, which is now available for purchase online and in stores. In the Green received great notices in the summer of 2019, and I'll get Grace to tell us what it's like to listen to the album and perhaps relive some of those days when people could still gather and perform and watch theater. I'll also get her to describe the music in the show. It's music that's often very powerful as well as evocative of the characters, the era, as well as relevant to today. The music is, as Time Out New York described, heavenly, a dazzling combination of folk, funk, and pop. The show's relevance to today is something I'll get Grace to reflect upon, and I'll ask her about her remarkable voice. It's the stuff that critics and reviewers have been raving about for years, whether it was in the original productions off and on Broadway of Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, or Cyrano, Alice by Heart, Brooklynite, and other productions that have wowed audiences in and around New York City, as well as around the world, as she's toured as an artistic ambassador for the U.S. State Department. She's a music educator, as well as fronts the band Grace MacLean and Them Apples. Visit gracemaclean.com for more, and her Twitter handle is at that Grace MacLean. We taped this interview 1 month ago. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Grace MacLean. Ms. MacLean, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be with you.
You're in a city that that I love, that a lot of us are thinking about,
and
you're in a business that a lot of us have a great affection for. What have these past few months been like for you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, they've been hard. You know, there's a lot this year that I was looking forward to being a part of and to working on. But the thing is, creative people don't stop.
Yeah.
It's the thing that I've really learned, you know, just because I had some projects that I was looking forward to that had to be postponed that actually made way for some other projects to, I was able to plant some seeds this year that I probably wouldn't have been able to otherwise. So that's a little bit of a silver lining that I'm actually quite grateful for.
But it has been tough, though, and I saw your Twitter recently, and you've been an advocate for housing security, and that's something that's important to think about, isn't it, in this time, especially when there really aren't laws that protect people who have housing insecurity.
Yes, and that's been a big thing that's been going on. In New York City, you know, the eviction moratorium officially ended at the end of October in New York City. And even though, you know, there were promises made that there would be no evictions, even though that the sort of official moratorium ended, there have been. And so it's been interesting, too. Yeah, I've joined this group called, I think they changed the name of it, but it may have started out being called Artists Amplifying Activists.
Uh-huh.
Which has been really wonderful. It's some producer and playwright friends of mine have partnered with some activist organizations, and pretty much consistently for the past couple of months, once a week, we'll meet and hear from the activist organization about the campaign that they're working on, and then we will call our reps, we'll call the governor, we'll call our state senators and representatives to lobby them for issues like housing in New York City. And that's also been a really wonderful way for us to come together and support actions that are already going on, but you know, we just get to add our voices to it.
Yeah.
As citizens, you know?
Yeah, it really is something that you know, when we, I guess a lot of us who are fans of the theater or you know, consumers of the arts, if you will, forget about just how often precarious it is for creative people, especially.
Yes, definitely. You know, I've had so many friends who have left the city just for now.
Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to be able to stay. And it has been interesting. You know, it's, I went into Manhattan to a rehearsal room for the first time in months. I had a gig with my band.
Uh-huh.
And we actually played at a venue where we frequently play. It's in the Lower East Side called Rockwood Music Hall. And it's been a place that I've been playing at for years, but because we've been so separated from that kind of experience. I mean, the venue, it was live streamed. It was just the band.
You're
and
right.
A camera person. But there was something so special about it, you know, to have been away from a thing that has become so much a part of my life and then to step into it again. The venue felt new, the rehearsal felt new, the music felt new and special again, you know, in a way that it hasn't in so long. And again, there's something that I'm grateful for in that. It makes me think like, yes, of course, I'm so excited. I don't know what we're going to do when we actually get to be in a room together for live theater or live music. Like, we're just going to be high on it.
And I'm
you
sure
know, I was touching it just so closely with, and not without even an audience, but there's something about not being able to have access to certain things that we've taken for granted that are making me appreciate them so much more.
Indeed. Yeah, I'm the same way as an audience member. You know, all those you know, opening nights, say, here in Vancouver that I decided to skip because, you know, I just didn't feel like going. You know, you really regret that, you know, especially in this past year or so. I'll go to anything now.
Yes. Yeah.
What has it been like for you, Grace, to listen to the In the Green CD, the cast recording? It must bring back such memories for you.
It really does. Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad that we have this recording. And to have it now, too. You know,
yeah.
I'm just so proud of everybody who was involved in bringing that show to life. It's interesting. You know, it's a story about these women who are locked away from the world by choice. But like pretty extremely, and having to sort of deal with what comes up when there is that absence that you just are having to deal with yourself and your own darkness. You know, these things come up, and I've noticed that in myself and in my peers and my friends that I talk to, you know, not being able to engage in life the way that we're used to. There are these like old little demons that come up, and we have to sort of deal with them. And that is In the Green. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to share that work with a wider audience right now. You know, there have been people who've reached out to me, people who saw the show,
mm-hmm.
reached out to me, who said, "I don't know if I got it when I saw the show, but I get it now." So I'm grateful for that, and I hope that it gets to live again too whenever we get back into
spaces. And you know, we all have streaming things and downloading things to listen to music. There really is something special, I should say, about having the physical CD, and I'm sure you've been feeling the same way. Just holding it even, right?
Yes, there is something so special about that. It's so funny, you know, I got the CDs and I gave some away to people in the cast and then some fans. There is something so nice about having that tangible thing, even if we can't be with people. Like, I do love having something to touch and feel, you know, look at the pictures and the words. Like, that's one little step closer.
Yeah, I mean, I remember growing up, you know, having cast albums of things that you know, I was obviously too young to have seen, wasn't born yet, and just what that meant to have the actual album, the CD,
Yeah, that you just like listen to over and over and you study and it becomes a part of you and you know the cadences. And
yeah.
Even if you don't know like the scene work that connects the songs, doesn't matter.
Yeah, see, I never saw In the Green, and so this is you know my way to go back to say Lincoln Center, you know, in 2019. It doesn't seem too long ago, but it does seem like a long time ago. I'm sure it does for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much, very much.
What?
But it's so funny because it's been living with us. You know, it does seem so long ago, but
because
we got the CD a year later in this time, and now there's you know, it's published. I just got the actual script, DTS. Published the show, and I got the bound copy and sent to me last week. That was so exciting too. I've never had anything of mine published before, and to have both of those things, the CD and the play itself, in my hands has felt really special in this time.
Yeah, this particular time.
Yeah.
What was the process in terms of writing the music? Was it a long process, and was it fun?
Oh, it was absolutely fun. So Hildegard herself was a composer, and some of the music in the show is inspired by Hildegard's work. So there's anything that's titled in Latin on the CD is Hildegard's, but I put my own flavor on
it.
So the very first song is a piece of hers that I decided to sing sort of like a Bulgarian women's chorus. Again, because I wanted to use her music, but I didn't want anything in the show to feel strictly medieval, because I felt that that would be alienating to an audience. You know, I've encountered other work about Hildegard, but I feel like in my watching it, I've been like, yeah, but I think that I like this just because I like Hildegard. If someone doesn't know her, I don't want to alienate people who don't already have some knowledge of this 900-year-old German saint.
Yeah.
So I wanted the music to have a sort of like medieval but ancient but timeless flavor, but then also sound sort of modern and recognizable. I wanted it to live in a space a little bit outside of a specific time. So I looked to Hildegard's music for inspiration, and then I just went from there into my own little dream world. But I am really proud of the arrangements that I did of Hildegard's music, and I hope that she would like them too.
Yeah, the music itself, I mean, it's been described as a combination of folk and pop and funk. It's just so evocative and engaging.
Thank you.
It's just fun to listen to. I'm sure when you were working on it, there must have been moments where you thought, well, no, this actually works. We'll do this for this part of the show or this song, say.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because most of my writing, now this is my first time writing a piece for theater. I write music for my band.
Uh-huh.
But there is still something about, you know, in putting together music for a show, for like a show with my band and for a theatrical show, there is something to pay attention to about like the set list. You know, I had other songs in the show that had to be cut for one reason or another, that didn't just quite work, or they sounded too similar to another song, you know, and you don't want to have that. And so it does come down to like, what's the emotional musical arc too? When does it come up and when does it come down, and when can we reference each other? I feel like I learned most of that kind of emotional arc journey in like putting together set lists with my band for a live show, which is, you know, it's a different medium, but I still want to think about the sonic journey I want to take an audience on, you know.
Is there a certain kind of music that you like performing?
Ooh, a certain kind. Well, I'll tell you this. My first real like voice lessons that I took were with a jazz voice teacher, which is I think a little bit of a funny way in, but I was really into jazz for a long time, and the thing about Well, I actually was taking lessons with this woman when I lived in California, where I grew up, in Los Angeles. Her name is Carmen Bradford. She lives in Georgia, and I think she's a jazz singer. When I moved to New York to come here for school, I continued taking lessons with her mother, who was also a jazz singer. Her name is Melba Joyce. And the two of them, I think, were instrumental in shaping kind of the way I approached singing and performing music,
uh-huh.
in that Carmen was, she was always about style and pocket and improvisation. Carmen never let me sing a song the same way twice. I could never sing a verse the same way twice. She was always encouraging play, but also rhythm. The play was never supposed to get too, you know, self-indulgent.
Uh-huh.
It's always it was always about, like, listening to what else is going on in the music and how do I fit within that, and how do there's like a partnership between you and the music. And then Melba would never let me sing a song until I could first speak the lyrics to her and have her be moved by them to know that I understood what was going on in the song. And so that was really about storytelling. So I learned that from jazz, which is so funny because I don't really sing that anymore. But I attribute those women and that kind of music to, the way I like to perform, which is really about, I love to perform music that has a good story. And that is musically challenging.
It's fascinating to hear you say that about your teachers, because, I mean, it also evokes a sort of, an East Coast, West Coast view of how to perform.
Oh, my gosh. I never even thought about that. That's funny.
I was listening to something on YouTube about a Barbara Cook interview, and she was asked about influences and who she should listen to, you know, at a young age, and she was told to go see Mabel Mercer at a nightclub because she did everything that you're not supposed to do, and that is, you know, sing the consonants out, right?
Ooh.
And that sounds like a very New York sort of thing, especially, you know, when you think of Mercer and storytelling in terms of performance, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
What?
I love that. Thank you.
How would you describe your own voice? Because it's been described in so many ways. I'm curious to know if you have a way of describing it.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for that question. I love it. I'm reminded of one time in an experimental theater voice class that I was taking in college. We had to write about our voices, and I remember describing my voice as green. So funny, name of my show.
Right.
And I think like velvet, and I don't know if that's quite the answer that you're looking for, but and I don't know if that's how I would still describe it. But I really like that.
Yeah,
I would like to think of my voice as a green velvet. I don't quite know what that means, but
And it's wonderful.
I'll just say that I am interested in my voice and the human voice in general,
uh-huh.
and its capacities and capabilities. And I'll say I'm more interested in like in finding out where those edges and boundaries are beyond prettiness and beyond being confined by a kind of particular technique. I'm interested in all kinds of techniques.
Yeah,
it's
fascinating because, I've listened, obviously, to the album, and I've seen clips of you performing as well as clips of you and your band. Them apples, and it really defies sort of a definition, if you will. I mean, the range is remarkable, it's robust. And the other thing that got me thinking as I was preparing for a chat is, how do you keep the voice as well as you do? I mean, you obviously don't want to strain it, say, before or after a performance. Are there certain mm-hmm. things that you do in terms of, say, maintaining the voice that you have?
Well, I'll say there are a couple of different teachers that I like to study with. Mm-hmm. And there are exercises that I've taken from all of them. And when I'm really, you know, when I'm doing a show like a theater show, a musical or something, and I've got to perform 8 days a week, ooh, I'm really taking care of this baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm warming up and I'm cooling down and I'm drinking a lot of water. And in the meantime, I am staying curious about it. And always learning what I can from new and different teachers. Oh gosh, I had a friend who just she's taking a class in flamenco singing that I was gonna take and that I for some reason couldn't. But like that would have been an amazing thing to do. I have another friend who what do you call it? Oh, she's like a Sufi singer.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, there are certain exercises that I have to sort of warm it up when it needs to be used a lot, but otherwise, it's the curiosity that I think keeps it fresh. Because otherwise, you know, it's like a muscle, and if you just keep using one muscle the same way all the time, you're neglecting all of these other little micro muscles that inform the whole.
Do you have a sense, Grace, as to where that your particular voice, where that comes from? I mean, that's not something one can invent. You're obviously born with it, but at the same time, it does take, some curiosity, I guess, on your part to cultivate it, right?
Definitely. Well, you know, my mother was a singer. My parents were musicians. So I come from a musical family, and I just always grew up around that. Having music in the house. And, you know, initially, I didn't think of myself as a singer because my mother was a singer, and I was like, well, she's going to try to tell me how to do it, and I'm going to do it my own way. And then, of course, I found my own way into it, and I said, oh, yeah, you're right, Mom, this is great. But I think just having grown up with music, and then, to discover it in my own way, really, really through those teachers, I think helped me, support that, I don't know, the curiosity that was already there.
Yeah. And then you do some teaching now, is that right?
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
What is that like to have been, say, a student for in the early part of your life, and then now to sort of do the same now? I mean, is it that thing? What's that line from The King and I, from your pupils you were taught? I mean, do you learn something? Do you get something out of it, say?
Oh, yeah. I'm always learning. And I really, I'll tell you, my favorite people to teach, I love teaching everybody, but I really love teaching people who don't necessarily identify as singers and who don't necessarily identify as performers. You know, I had a student for a while. She was a woman in her 60s who was a landscape architect, and she wanted to feel comfortable singing Joni Mitchell in the car with her friends.
Mm.
I loved teaching her. I loved it so much because she had such a desire to develop a new relationship with her voice. And then there are other people, they're like singer-songwriters, and we start to get into the pieces that they have written and the way that they're playing them and like what their body is doing when they're holding their guitar or they're playing on the piano and how that affects their breath, but also how that affects their storytelling. You know, everybody has their own way in and their own desires that they want to get out of the voice lessons. You know, in my first lesson with anybody, I always ask them what it is that they hope to get out of working with me, and I want to keep that in mind because I don't want to just tell them something that they don't want to hear, or they're not ready to hear, or that they're not interested in hearing.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
So it really is an individual approach with everybody. Also, if you take lessons with me, you're going to do a lot of funny things. Like, we're probably going to be on the floor at some point, and you're probably going to be, you know, a river of sound will run through you at some point. You know, it's a little non-traditional.
Yeah, yeah.
But the people who want something like that can get it. And I think it's fun. I have fun. And I hope my students do too.
And
the ones that keep coming back anyway.
Indeed. And there is a lesson there, isn't there, about you know, I mean, you can get to New York at, say, 18, as you did. But there's a lot of hard work along the way, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, the hard work doesn't end.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that, because I saw this in a blog post that you wrote. You have to put in the time, don't you? You can't just, you know, assume that you hit Manhattan,
yeah,
and make it. I mean, you know, the reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. I said something about, you know, even if you, you don't want to, sometimes you've got to just do that work and put in those hours and get to know and get to make friends sort of with your mistakes and your failures and learn from them. Oh man, I've made so many of those, but I'm so grateful for them.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, even the big scary ones. Yeah, those are the best learning experiences, by trying and doing it wrong.
Yeah, I alluded to your band a moment ago, you and your band, Them Apples. Are you guys working on another album now?
We are, yes, yes, yes. I'm so excited about it. It's actually, most everything is recorded, you know, way pre-pandemic, but mm-hmm. things kind of get backlogged on the other side, you know, with mixing and mastering and all of that stuff, but we're working on it now. I'm so excited about it. I'm coming back to this music that was recorded a little while ago, and I'm feeling... yeah, really, really good about it. It'll be our first full-length album. We have two EPs, but mm-hmm. this one's going to be like 9 or 10 songs. And in the meanwhile, I'm also excited about some music video ideas that I've had. You know, in the pandemic, I've just been thinking about other artist friends of mine who I whose work I know and love and who I want to collaborate with. So I've started to reach out to some people to find out how we can take some of this music and move it into another medium and continue to find a way to collaborate, even if it's somehow distanced or somehow, you know, with a smaller crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, considering In the Green, will you ever write another show?
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
I'm actually collaborating on a couple right now. I am working with a novelist. Her name is Kate Walbert. She's written a few books, but the one that she wants to adapt to a musical is called A Short History of Women, and we're working on that together. I have another collaboration with writer Kate Douglas, who found these fantastic Victorian-era medical texts, which supports the insidiousness of music and how women should not be listening to music because it gives them menstrual mania. Anyway, so that's the inspiration for a piece we're writing called Against Women and Music, which is actually the title of the paper that she found, this like 19th century paper by some German doctor.
Wow.
Really fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Adam Chandler Barat, probably know as an actor mostly. He's also a really wonderful writer. He and I are just starting a collaboration on a piece that was inspired by the life and music of Tchaikovsky. It's loosely inspired, but we're really excited about Tchaikovsky's violin concerto in particular and the sort of story behind that. So there's lots to think about, lots to research, and this is the perfect time to do some thinking and researching and writing. So,
well, I can't wait for the next. I can't wait for the next thing, because listening to In the Green, the cast recording has just been a wonderful introduction. Not only to your work, but Hildegard and the sort of music that she did, as well as the different sort of genres that you dabble in. It's a very fine achievement. Congratulations, and I appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thanks for talking with me. Thanks for listening.
Visit ghostlightrecords.com for more information on the album. It's the original cast recording of In the Green. And, of course, gracemclean.com, and check her out on Twitter, @ThatGraceMclean. Grace McLean joined me on the line from New York City in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.